It was on time. Thank you very much. Boom, boom. Nice. Just, you know how it is, Sandra. You see me. It's just between ourselves, too. We don't talk about it. It's just there. All right. So once again, the sermon title, I'm sorry, it's a bit off, you know, because, again, I do these so far in advance. And at the time, they seem like brilliant ideas. A road trip, all right? So way back in December, beginning of December, I was planning. See, Diana's not here, so it's going to be a really long sermon, all right? Because she's usually over there telling me, you know, I'm restraint free. Look out. So I'm planning her vacation. I mean, I'm planning her Christmas gift, all right? This is way back in early December, and I, all of her life, she's wanted to make, you know, like a month long road trip. Which, that's not me. I'm destination, I am not journey, okay? But I'm like, okay, I need to do this. And so I'm going to plan out. And so the idea is to get to Route 66, you know, it's in fragments, and do all of that. And I'm going to take off the whole month of July, and we're going to be able to do this. And I give her all this information about how we're going to do this. And, of course, guess what? No, she did want it, yeah. But it's not going to happen. Andrea signed up for summer school, you know. I'm not on vacation for the month of July, you know. So, yeah, so it didn't work out. But in December, I said, so my last Sunday will be June 30th, and I can talk about the road trip that we're getting ready to take, and then tie it into the gospel lesson. You could see how this was all going to work out just fine. And then, you know, but it isn't going to work out that way exactly this time. But the roads aren't going anywhere. I'm not going anywhere. We will eventually do this. I just take it as a sign of God. We're not supposed to do this. That's what I think. Because God knows I'm not a journey person. I hate journey. I know there's all those wonderful songs. Life is a highway. I want to ride. I could just hear that going on the road again. You're just like, oh my God, I've been everywhere, man, I'm like, I'll last like 3 minutes in a song like that, and I'm a destination person. Destinations are important. I understand there's a journey, but destinations are important. You've all probably heard about Albert Einstein. Haven't you heard about him? Real brilliant guy, right? Real smart scientist, everything like that. Really, 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 really smart guy. He's on the train. All right, he's gone, and the conductor comes back, because back in those days, you rode the train, and he's gone the train, and the conductor comes by, tickets, tickets, I need your tickets. Everybody give me your tickets. Einstein can't find his ticket. Starts looking in his pockets, gets out his lug, starts opening the suit. He can't find. The conductor says, it's okay, Mr. Einstein, Dr. Einstein, it's okay. I know who you are. It's okay. I don't need your ticket. Goes on to the other passengers, get their ticket. Einstein's still looking for the ticket. It's okay. It's okay. You don't have to worry about it. He's still looking around, going through, rummaging through everything. And just, and finally the conductor comes back to him and he said, Mr. Einstein, I told you, it's okay. I know who you are. Einstein looks at him and says, I know who I am too. I don't know where I'm going. Sometimes, things like that, it happens to preachers. Not me, but it happened to Billy Graham. Billy Graham starting his career, you know, he'd go to the stadiums in different towns and all of that, and he's in a town he's not been before, and he needs to get to the post office. He's got letters and postcards he wants to mail. He needs to get to the post office, and he sees this kid, and he says, can you tell me how to get to the post office? And the kid says, sure, you go down the street, turn right at the second block, and you'll see the post office. And Billy Graham says, hey, if you come to the stadium tonight, I'll tell you how to come to heaven. And the kid says, no, I don't think so. And Billy says, why? He says, you don't even know how to find the post office. It can be a strange thing sometimes, you know. And other people, I remember a preacher calling on someone. This woman hadn't been doing anything in the life of the church. Hadn't been sharing a life of discipleship. And he was going to get her, you know, there's Sunday school, there's youth group, there's women's work, all kinds, the altars guild, Methodist, all kinds of different things going on. There's all kinds of opportunities. And so he went to her house to call on her and invite her into a life of discipleship. And he brought up Sunday school, and you know, we need a preschool teacher in that. She goes, well, I've been aiming to think about that, but I'm not sure. And he says, okay, well, then we have the youth leaders on Wednesday night. We need some help with that. Well, I've been kind of aiming about maybe doing something with that. And he says, well, what about the women's guild? They need some help with the altars guild to take care of the linens and the pyramid. Well, I've been kind of aiming about doing something with that. And he said, lady, you've been aiming long enough. Time to pull the trigger. Pick something. Do something. This is what Jesus is talking about with the call to discipleship. There's three would-be disciples. They think, they talk. Jesus is inviting them into a life of discipleship. That's what Jesus does with each of us. And you'll notice it's a life of discipleship, not a life of convenience. It's not about comfort. It's not about convenience. It's about discipleship. We have the freedom to follow or not. But there is no such thing as conditional discipleship. You don't get to say, well, Jesus, I'll follow you if we can agree on these following conditions. It's not a contract. It's all or nothing. Either you're in or you're out. That's all there is. You only have a choice. You don't get to tell Jesus under what conditions you're willing to serve him. It's total, complete surrender. And a lot of times, sometimes we have a problem with that. This Thursday is Independence Day. We remember the Revolutionary War. And I thought I would talk to you a little bit about a couple of revolutionaries. One you may not have heard of. One I'm pretty sure you have. The one you probably haven't heard of is a man, white preacher, Baptist preacher, named Clarence Jordan. Clarence Jordan. He was a strange phenomenon in North American Christianity. Not nearly as famous as Martin Luther King Jr. He was a little bit before Martin's time. But he was just as revolutionary. A white Baptist preacher. Belonging to a denomination that, especially at that time, was known for conforming to the culture. But that's not the way Clarence saw it. Clarence stressed the anti-cultural, Christ-transcending, Christ-transforming parts of the gospel. He grew up in Georgia. Was a farmer as well as a preacher, got a degree in agriculture from the University of Georgia, but continued on with his education, getting a PhD in Greek New Testament from Southern Baptist Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky, not Louisville, Texas. He became famous for his cotton patch gospels. He's the guy that translated the New Testament into the cotton patch gospels. It became a musical. But his most famous translation never made it to print. His most famous translation of the New Testament appeared in Real Work in the Red Earth of Georgia and in the lives of people. He was instrumental in helping with the Habitat for Humanity. But before even that, back in 1942, he founded Koinonia Farms. America's Georgia, that's where they were. He combined his interest with scientific agriculture and with his passion for the gospel and for Jesus. Clarence and his wife Florence came into Sumter County, Georgia to live out the gospel, to live out the teachings of Jesus amid the racism and the poverty of the rural South. And in the midst of a segregated and racist society, Jordan envisioned a place where blacks and whites could live and work together in a spirit of partnership. Based on a radical call to discipleship, Jordan created a community that was committed to racial integration and integration, nonviolence, a simplified lifestyle, sharing of possessions, and stewardship of the land and its resources. He called this experiment koinonia. Koinonia. It's a Greek word. It means community. It means fellowship. It's the word that's used to describe right there after Acts 2. Remember the Pentecost and Peter gets up and preach? And if you go to the end of the chapter, they all sell everything they have and live in community, sharing their possessions and praising God. That was Jordan. That was what Jordan thought. It wasn't made just for Jerusalem. It was made for the entire planet. He used to say that his little farm was a demonstration plot of land for the kingdom of God. They began with three principles. All people are related in God's eyes. Live in accordance with Christ's love. And common ownership, distribution according to the first century Christian principles, based on need, not on profit. Now, how well do you think it was received? Living out the Bible in the rural country of southern Georgia. Throughout the time, the 40s, the 50s, and the 60s, the Koinonia farms withstood threats and property damage, excommunication from churches, grand jury investigations, economic boycotts. Fences were cut, crops were stolen from the field, garbage was dumped on the property. A truck's engine was ruined by sugar being put into the tank. 300 fruit trees chopped down to the ground. The farm's little roadside market was bombed several times and eventually destroyed completely. Night riders would come in and spray all the houses with machine guns. Crosses burning on the lawns. When that didn't work, the residents of Sumter County decided to do an economic boycott. We won't buy any of their products. And they organized the boycott of the farms. Not willing to let that stop them, they decided to start a mail order business selling the pecans. Because that's something that the local residents can't control. They can't control the U.S. mail. And so they came up with a great slogan that a marketing theme for them as they tried this new venture. Help us ship the nuts out of Georgia. That's Clarence Jordan. He had a vision. He gave his life to that discipleship. How much respect do you think he got? How much recognition do you think he got? How much support do you think he got? When he died at the age of 57 in his riding shack, the coroner would not even come to the farm to pronounce him dead. A life of discipleship is not about convenience. It's not about comfort. It's not about recognition. It's not always about support. Clarence had approached his brother, Robert. His brother Robert would become a state senator, would become a judge on the state Supreme Court. He approached Robert and asked him for some help one time. To be the Koinonia's attorney because there are all these things going on. And his brother said, I can't do that. You know my aspirations. I might lose my job. I might lose my house. I might lose everything I got. And Clarence said, we might lose everything too. And Robert said, well, it's different for you. And Clarence answered. He said, why? We both joined the church, the same church on the same Sunday as boys. The preacher asked us the same question. Do you accept Jesus as your Lord and Savior? What did you say? And Robert said, I follow Jesus up to a point. And Clarence answered, could that point by any chance be the cross? And Robert said, hey, I'll follow him to the cross, but not on the cross. I'm not going to get crucified. And Clarence Sargent answered, "Then I don't believe you're a disciple. You're an admirer of Jesus. You need to go back to your church and tell them you're an admirer of Jesus, but you're not a disciple of Jesus." And Robert said, "Well, if everyone did that, we wouldn't have a church, would we?" And Clarence says, "Are you sure you have a church now?" Jesus doesn't ask us if we hold the right political, theological, philosophical ideas. Jesus asks us to follow. Chances are good you've heard of this next revolutionary. A guy named Albert Schweitzer. You have heard of Albert Schweitzer. I know you've heard of Albert Schweitzer. Renowned theological scholar, pianist, organist, brilliant on music, medical doctor. Second half of his career was devoted to serving a medical mission in Lambarene, Africa. But he couldn't get the church to support his missionary work because he didn't have the right theological perspectives. And so he would go off and to other countries and put on these concerts because he was a brilliant musician. And he would get funding for his mission work that way by putting on these concerts. The first part of his career as a theologian, he wrote a revolutionary book. Had never been thought of. It was called, you've heard of it, The Quest for the Historical Jesus. Began all kinds of thinking and new ways of looking at Jesus and all kinds of conversation went out because of it. Some of you may have heard of a guy named Fred Craddock, and Fred talks about a time when he first read the book. Fred at that time was in his early 20s, just getting ready on his own theological scholarly career. And he read Schweitzer's Christology and he felt that Schweitzer was woefully inadequate. Little too much water, not enough wine, as he said. It just he marked up the book, wrote in the margins, raised up questions of all kinds. Fred was in Knoxville. Heard Schweitzer was going to be in Cleveland, Ohio. Fred decided to take a road trip to go to Cleveland to challenge Schweitzer about his Christology. And so he got himself a bus ticket. Went up there to Cleveland. They were dedicating in New Oregon. That's why Schweitzer was there. And they had said that afterwards he'd be down in the fellowship hall with refreshments and an opportunity to meet and greet and talk with Albert Schweitzer. That's why Fred was going. He didn't care about the music. He didn't care about the organ. He wanted an opportunity to correct Schweitzer's thinking because he was wrong. Albert was wrong, and he needed somebody to correct him. You know how that is when you're 20 years old. Do you not remember what that was like? How wrong everybody else was and how right you were, and if only they would listen to you, everything would be a whole lot better, wouldn't they? Well, he was the same way, went the same way. So he goes there after the concert. He's the first one down in the fellowship hall. First one there. He don't care about the refreshments. He's there on the front row of the seats with his pad, with his questions, ready to take on Albert Schweitzer. After a little while, Schweitzer comes in. I don't know if you've ever seen pictures. He's got the white... He kind of looks like Albert Einstein, actually. The white hair, drooping mustache, kind of drooped in the shoulders. He comes in with his cup of tea and some refreshments. And he thanked everyone. "You've been very warm and hospitable to me. And I thank you for that. I wish I could stay longer. But I must get back to Africa. I have to get back to Africa because many of my people are poor and they're diseased and they're hungry and they're dying. My children are dying. I have a medical station there and I'm desperately trying to help them. If there's anyone here tonight, anyone here at all in this room who has the love of Jesus in their heart, who would like to be able to share that love and to share the care of Christ and to share the love of Jesus, to help my children who are starving and who are dying, if that could prompt you to possibly go with me, I would love to have you come join me. And Fred said he looked down at his questions and realized they were absolutely stupid. And Fred said, I learned again what it means to be a Christian. And I hoped that one day I might be one. Whenever you find compassion and caring for the sick and the hurting, wherever you find people working for peace, wherever you find people welcoming the marginalized and disenfranchised, whenever you find people lifting up the downtrodden, caring for the most vulnerable, loving the enemy, working for the common good, standing up for equity and fairness, you'll find Jesus. You'll find Jesus. The path of discipleship is a road trip. And most of us on that path are learning something new every single day, either about ourselves or about what God is calling us to do. And like most road trips, there are times when it is smooth sailing. You know how that can be. Everything is just working beautifully. Beautiful, majestic scenes. Times when we're just making great progress. And then there are those other times. You hit a storm you don't expect. You can't even see the hood of your car. You get stopped in traffic. You could get there faster if you walked. You know what I'm talking about, when you just hit roadblock after roadblock after pothole, and you got a flat tire, and then the engine quits, and the transmission is slipping, and you wonder if you're ever going to get anywhere in your life of discipleship. These unexpected detours. And yet through it all, we discover very much that God is with us on the whole journey, active in the world, calling us to share in this road trip of discipleship. Wouldn't you like to dig a little bit deeper in your own life than to think about what you're going to have for breakfast? Worry about what you might watch on TV, thinking about what you might have for dessert. We're made for something more than that. We're called to something more than that. It's not about a journey against a destination, because discipleship is our journey, and it leads us on our destination, because our destination is Jesus. And when we walk the road of discipleship, we walk with Jesus. Jesus doesn't ask us about our theology. Jesus asks us, will you follow? Will you follow? Will you follow? Amen.